The nation of Haiti has its own brutal narrative of instability, disaster, and a poverty that eludes any solution despite the billions contributed from around the world and spent by the many NGOs working in Haiti for decades. This week marks the sixth anniversary of the 2010 earthquake in Haiti, a 7-magnitude quake that killed more than 220,000 people. The emerging generation of Haitians will be defined by their survival of this disaster, just as author M.J. Fievre's generation is defined by the violence of the Tonton Macoute in the years of Haiti's president-priest Jean-Bertrand Aristide. M.J. Fievre's memoir is called A Sky the Color of Chaos. She says there are many voices in Haiti trying to find new colors.
A lot of writers right now are trying to change the fact that Haiti is only seen when tragedy strikes. I think literature is a good way to show all the facets of Haiti. You know, it's not that what we get from the news is not true, but there's so much more to Haiti than the violence and the poverty. And I try to do just that in my book, A Sky the Color of Chaos. I try to present Haiti entirely.
You write about places of truly unspeakable beauty in this book, A Sky the Color of Chaos. You also write about the violence, and I sometimes feel as though the title of the book is your way of, as a little girl, being able to look up and cause all of the instability and fear that was happening at ground level to go away. Did you used to do that?
I used to do that, and there is a scene in the book where I find myself at the wrong place, at the wrong time, and there's a protest going on, and things go crazier than they already were that day, and people start shooting. And I find myself on the ground trying to remain safe, and I'm looking at the sky, and the sky is a perfect blue. It's such a beautiful blue, and yet I'm listening to all those people yelling and people are shooting around me. That beauty is what kept me grounded that day.
You walk into places of such ugliness in this book, and you walk into them with such casualness. Not that you're unafraid of them or that you don't understand what you're doing, but you have a childlike quality. I'm thinking of the scene where you go to the morgue. How did you reconcile the life that was all around you and the death that was all in that room?
You know, it was at that point I really had to grow up, because I knew there was the violence. I heard about it on the radio. I saw it on TV, and I witnessed a few very remarkable scenes, but I had never really seen the result the way I got to see in the morgue. It was just awful. Piles and piles of bodies with no one coming and claiming them. And most of them were the results of the either violence or the fact that there was an embargo in Haiti. So that moment was when I really felt for myself the consequences of everything that had been going on.
You also write about love and lost love in this book, and it's something very, very personal. And when this man was gone, and you can tell me the circumstances in a moment, you described that you had late nights of perplexity and private sorrow when you gorged on your own heart, unable to silence your demons. He invaded my dreams, which scattered me across the globe. He hid in the corners of my mind and appeared when I was alone. Broody, soulful layers of sweat and oil thickened on his skin like glaze. That's a very powerful sense of yearning and loss. And yet you get so accustomed to loss, it seems, in Haiti, that I feel as though you were really prepared to have something like that taken from you.
Right. Loss in Haiti, it's not that we get used to it, but we get reacquainted with it.
You prepare for it.
Right, so that you're always ready for the worst. I mean, even the decision to leave your house in the morning makes you wonder about whether you're going to come back because there are random acts of violence, so that you're always ready for the worst. But when the worst happens, somehow it still takes you by surprise because you don't expect it to still hurt that much. So as a teenager, I didn't really have a healthy relationship with guys. So that this particular man that you read about, I made him my whole life because I needed someone to keep me above water. The fact that I was stuck in the country, I wanted to leave so badly. I was in a situation at home where my dad terrorized us, that I wanted someone to just take care of me, and that's what he did, that young man. So that when he left, I did feel quite devastated, and I couldn't help compare that loss to all the many losses that we endure when we live in Haiti.
What do you want people to take from this story?
Well, when I moved to Miami about 13 years ago, one thing that I've noticed is that because I come from another place, I was seen as other, which is kind of surprising when you think about it, because everyone in Miami is from somewhere. Most people are from some other place. But yet, you know, people are trying to figure you out. Who are you? And they have this idea of life in Haiti that really doesn't resonate to be true to me. So when I started writing this book, one of my main concerns was to show people how it is to live in Haiti. Because in my mind, I just had a regular childhood. You know, I had a life. Living in Haiti is possible, and this is how it was done. So a young person, whether from Haiti or not, will definitely relate to the fact that so often as teens we feel alienated, there's a lot of solitude, falling in love for the first time, and being misunderstood by family members and by friends, experiencing certain kinds of friendship for the first time, and the impact of growing up in a certain place has on anyone. It might be Haiti for me, but a girl from Little Havana, for instance, might relate to how a place shapes who you are.
Well, MJ, it's lovely to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, John, for having me.
MJ Fievre is a poet and author, most recently of A Sky the Color of Chaos, out now.